Good morning, everyone. Go ahead and take a seat. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. It's always nice to have in-person oral arguments back at the Judicial Center. Today, July 19, we have three matters set for oral argument. I will ask our marshal, Miranda Johnson, to call the first case. And counsel, just a reminder, each of you has 15 minutes for presentation of your case. 5 minutes is additionally reserved to appellant counsel if you choose to use it. For our recording purposes, please state your name and indicate who you are speaking on behalf of when you approach the podium. Podium also has a button in case you need to adjust it for height differences. And appellant counsel, when you're ready to proceed, please do so.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is John Donovan. I'm an assistant state public defender, and I represent the appellant in this case, Michael Swanson. In July of 2021, Mr. Swanson made a pair of rude comments to an employee at a Casey's convenience store. No doubt these comments were improper, but they were not harassment under the statute, and they were not threatening. However inappropriate these comments may have been, they were not criminal behavior, and they did not support reasonable, articulable suspicion to justify Officer Volk seizing Mr. Swanson when he conducted a traffic stop. Importantly, these comments were the only reason identified by Officer Volk as the only reason found by the district court for the stop. The officer did not identify the state.
Does that matter?
It does matter.
For our de novo review?
For your de novo review, yes, it does matter, Your Honor. It matters because what I was saying there was that there's no reasonable articulable suspicion of impaired driving to support the stop.
Well, this is what bothers me about the court's analysis. The clerk said he's drunk and he's driving. So why wouldn't that be the same as a citizen complaint or a tip or something? Why was that not explored?
Well, I think that's probably a question for the state, because I think to begin with, the state is the party with the burden. The state had the obligation at that hearing to justify that stop.
That, then, why can't we rely on that, which is in the record, to support the district court's findings?
Because I'm going to back us all the way up to the standard of review. Because the standard of review here is this court independently reviews the facts and determines de novo as a matter of law if those facts can justify the stop.
Right, and one of the facts is the transcript and the audio recording of the statement that was made to the officers as to what happened in the convenience store, correct?
I disagree, Your Honor.
Why?
That is evidence that was in the record. The facts are what the district court found. What the district court finds is what you're going to use. Those facts are what the district court finds.
Well, is that, okay, you have to provide the case law support for that when we have a de novo review. We can consider, as I understand it, all the evidence that was presented in the omnibus hearing to make our determination de novo as to whether or not the evidence would support an officer's independent decision objectively as to reasonable suspicion.
I'm going to disagree with the premise, though,
right,
Your Honor, because what Dee Dee says very clearly, and Smith and all of these cases about reasonable suspicion, I agree it's de novo, but it is the facts. You independently review the facts. And just because there is some piece of evidence doesn't mean that it's a factual finding. The district court is not obligated to find every fact that is presented. One of the other pieces of testimony that's in the record was Jameel Williams, who testified at the omnibus hearing that I was driving. I was the one who was driving to the store. What are we going to do with that fact? The district court decided it's going to find the facts, and it didn't find any facts about
it. But why would an objective officer hearing? We know what the officer heard. We know the officer heard the witnesses say that the defendant was driving the car. So the officer doesn't have to weigh credibility. The officer hears. It doesn't matter whether your client was driving the car or not. It matters what the officer understood and whether that supports an objective, reasonable officer's decision. As I understand the law, if there's a case that specifically contradicts this, that we're not allowed to consider the evidence presented, then you'd have to point me to that case.
I don't want to sound like a broken record, but that's not a fact the district court found. The district court narrows the record. What you are working on is the district court's omnibus order. Those are the facts. And I agree that a clerk said this.
Because what is the case that most strongly supports that proposition of law, that the district court's findings are what we consider without regard to the evidence that was presented, undisputed evidence that was presented to the district court as to what the officers heard and saw?
It's not undisputed evidence. They stipulate to its admission. They don't stipulate to its veracity.
Well, I guess I'm lost. There's no dispute that the officers heard the statements, regardless of whether the statements were accurate or not. The question is whether the officers heard the witnesses say what they said, correct? Isn't that the issue for reasonable suspicion?
I'm going to back us up, and I'm not trying to be sort of shifty here. It's not what it is what the officer heard. The officer doesn't testify that he heard that. I won't dispute that if you watch that video that they say that. That doesn't make it into his report. And he doesn't, and the other thing that we have to think about
here. We have a transcript of the officer having a back-and-forth exchange. The officer asks the question. The witness answers the question. The officer asks another question. The witness answers the question. And the answers are congruent with the questions. And what was said in the answers were he was drunk, he was disorderly, repeatedly. It always comes in drunk. His speech was slurred. The officer even recounts. So he was stumbling. The officer recounts. You think there's a question as to whether the officer heard?
I think there is a question, because why isn't that in the report? I think the other thing that we have to think about here, though,
is... Because everything doesn't go into a police report.
True, but also everything that's at an omnibus hearing doesn't go into the record and become a fact. The district court is the one who finds the fact.
So I guess what you're saying is, if I understand you correctly, if we were in a different situation and we were determining whether probable cause or reasonable suspicion existed for a stop, and the officer says, I observed A, B, and C, and the dash cam camera shows E, F, and G, we're not allowed to consider E, F, and G because it didn't go into the officer's report as to what the officer
saw. It would depend on what the district court found. And if the district court finds, I believe the officer, I think that what this court ultimately decided is if there's video evidence that completely contradicts it could be clearly erroneous.
Going back to my original question, though, just a big picture, is there a case that specifically supports this proposition that you're asking us to reach, this division between findings of fact and the evidence that's presented without any objection?
Those are just different words, as we understand them.
No,
and the standard of review is...
I'm asking whether there's a case that supports the distinction you're asking us to draw.
I think that... There's not one that says, okay, not the record, it's the facts. But the cases say you independently review the facts. The district court is the fact finder here. This court is going to be acting as a fact finder if it says that officer has, you know, knows that, and that's a reason for the stop. The other thing when we're talking about reasonable articulable suspicion is...
Didn't the district court say that the officer heard these... The district court based its decision on the officer having heard the exchange between the officer and the witnesses.
I think I think the district court's finding of facts come entirely from that officer's testimony, because the district court says it's about harassing and threatening comments. The other piece here is the officer needs to be able to articulate at the omnibus hearing. That's the standard of review.
Well,
reasonable suspicion.
Question, then why can't we affirm the district court on a different basis?
You can affirm the district court on a different basis if there are a few things that are not present here. If we're looking at Gruneg, which is a case where they said they didn't waive an argument, they raised that ground in Gruneg. It was about apparent authority for a search. They're challenging that search. They want to suppress the evidence. The state raised that ground at the omnibus hearing. We are also relying on apparent or actual authority. The state didn't raise this ground here. At that omnibus hearing, the state questions the witness and the officer about apparent and actual authority. They elicit that testimony. That didn't happen here. And then also, importantly, the district court made a factual finding. There is a factual finding in the district court that he said he told the officer he had permission and then testified at the hearing that he didn't have written permission. So there is a basis in the district court's findings of fact there. And we don't have that here. And to just sort of go back to that second one and where I was trying to go with you, Judge Ross, is that the standard says the officer must articulate at the omnibus hearing the particular and objective basis. So I think what that means is the officer has to be saying at the omnibus, these are my reasons for the stop. And even if they're wrong,
so
the rest of the facts.
You're suggesting then that there's a subjective basis that we're... I don't know that the case law supports the suggestion that you're making now, which would render the review based upon the officer's subjective understanding as to what the basis is for the stop. When we, the U.S. Supreme Court, our Supreme Court, this court repeatedly has said, even if the officer didn't recognize that there was a basis for the stop, a reasonable officer would, based upon what the information was in front of the officer.
And I'm not going to disagree with that. But what it still says is the officer has to articulate particular facts. So what that means is that if the officer articulates those facts, and let's say they're wrong, that I'm going to make up a scenario. Let's say the officer said, the clerk told me he was drunk, they said he was stumbling, they said he was bragging about when he was driving, and says all these facts, but then adds. Then he says, and you know what? And in my head, I thought, boy, you people who drink and drive, usually done it before, probably has another DWI, probably canceled IPS. I stopped him because it was canceled IPS. That would be wrong. But he has articulated other facts at the omnibus hearing that would support that objective basis. And you still need the officer to say enough facts. So I agree, we're looking at it as an objective
standard.
But
the officer did say, I think, or shouldn't we infer from the record, that the officer testified that the officer made the decision to stop based upon the information he received in the interview with the witnesses at the scene?
I do not believe that he says that his basis for the stop was the harassment. Were the comments that he made, I believe, are his statements at the stop.
Based upon what he heard the witnesses tell him.
True, but there's still no finding from the district court. We need to have a factual finding. This court cannot engage in fact-finding.
This is what I keep coming back to this. You know, I've got the court order in front of me. The court received Exhibit 1, including the related police reports, Exhibit 2, a CD containing the related audio files, pictures, and videos. That's evidence. It's no different than a police officer's testimony. That's also evidence. I mean, that's what you tell jurors. Evidence is evidence. So why can't we extrapolate from the documents, the exhibits that came in, a basis for the stop?
Because just because there's evidence in the record doesn't obligate a fact finder to believe it. You can stipulate to the admission.
Believe what? I guess what's something to believe what?
To believe the evidence that's in the record.
No, but in this case, what is it you're suggesting that might not be believed?
That the officer heard him say, or heard them say, he's drunk. That he has any reason that he's stopping them because they are drunk.
Okay, so you're saying we got to know what's inside of the officer's head, and if he doesn't say it, then we can't create that basis for a stop?
Yes, because the officer needs to...
I get what you're getting at now. It's why did the officer act on this, and if he didn't articulate it, how do we know what he said?
That's exactly where I'm trying to go with this, is, yeah, they need to articulate those at the omnibus hearing, the reasons for the stop, and then this court is going to judge if that gave him a particular basis, objective, to support the stop.
It sounds subjective to me. It sounds like you're asking for a subjective review of the officer's basis for the stop. It sounds like that, and I'm sure there's other issues you want to get to. So
I think that this is probably the big one and clearly has the court's interest. I'm happy to stay, and I'd love to win you over if I can.
Keep going.
It's not, but it's subjective. He has to say all these facts, whatever those facts are, what his reasons for the stop are.
He has to say those facts.
He has to articulate at the omnibus hearing.
That's where I'm looking for the case law support. When the district court says, I've received this, and there's no dispute, as I read the omnibus hearing, there's no argument, well, maybe the officer didn't hear, this is in a different room. The back and forth exchange in that transcript doesn't indicate in the least that there's a lack of hearing between the officer and the person who's giving the story. And the congruency between the questions and answers suggests the opposite. And by the way, the audio file, I've listened to the audio file, mm-hmm. There's not a lot of noise in the background.
Sure.
It's a quiet conversation between mm-hmm. the officer and the witnesses.
There's not back and forth about that because the state isn't eliciting any testimony about that. The state is the party with the burden. The state is asking the officer questions. If that's going to be a basis for the stop, the state needs to develop it. So they're not, you know, debating what's on
those
discs.
But why not just the introduction of the evidence? I mean, the The transcript was admitted, at least, the transcript itself was admitted, and the audio was admitted. Mm-hmm. And the district court expressly declares, I've received those into evidence. So, and there's no debate about whether any of the thing, any of what you're saying is really an issue in the omnibus proceeding.
Because the district court's finding of facts don't reflect anything that is in there. The district court's findings reflect Officer Volk's testimony.
But the findings occurred after the omnibus proceeding.
There was
no debate during the omnibus proceeding that was admitted into evidence was not actually heard by the officer.
But what happens in an omnibus is the district court receives all sorts of things, and it hears all this testimony, and it narrows the record. So the district court narrows the record and says, of everything that's presented, because there's conflicting things in that audio with those clerks. Is she in the back, or is she up front? Is he saying them to her?
That's different. That goes to the truth of the matter that's being asserted.
Exactly.
It doesn't go to whether the officer heard the thing that's being asserted.
But
which is what you're asking. That's the difference between it's not a substantive question, it's what was said.
True, but it's a mess. That exhibit is a mess on what they're saying. So when is he driving drunk? Was it earlier that day? Is it now? When is he drunk?
It's clear. But she says his speech was slurred. The officer asks why she thought he was drunk. Mm-hmm. There was no suggestion that, earlier in a different exchange, it was a response immediately to mm-hmm. what was happening at the time. It seems obvious.
I know my time is up, but if I can just say one thing. If it's so obvious, the district court should have found it, and the state should have presented that argument, and the state did not. So,
thank you, Mr. Donovan.
Good morning, if I may please the court. My name is Ken Jantz, and I represent the state of Minnesota, specifically the city of Gaylord in this matter. And as I can tell from your inquiries with counsel here, it sounds like there's a major question. Why wasn't this DWI? Why wasn't that discussed? Why wasn't testimony elicited? Why wasn't that explored at the omnibus hearing? And I thought those same things, too, when I first received this appeal. And I think it is quite clear, once you look at the defendant's memorandum, specifically, the defense had conceded that there was, in fact, reasonable articulable suspicion of disorderly conduct that had occurred at the Casey's.
Counsel, I'm going to interrupt for a minute because we haven't spent much time at all on the findings and conclusions by the court.
Yes.
These were compiled after the omnibus hearing, is that correct?
Correct.
And the conclusions of law that the court made mentioned that the stop of the vehicle was justified by the harassing or threatening comments that were made. There's no talk about whether witnesses thought he'd been drinking or anything of that nature. That's where the court found the conclusion of law as to why the stop occurred, correct?
Your Honor, and I guess I would, to a certain point, disagree.
Well, it's written right there, so you tell me where I'm missing.
Well, the court also goes on that based upon the complaint made by the employees along with the idea of defendant in the vehicle.
Are you reading from the conclusions here?
This, I believe, was down in the memorandum.
Okay, I'm not talking about the memorandum. We'll get to that.
Yes.
But in the conclusions, the stop was justified by the rude exchange, which is now referred to as harassing or threatening, correct? That's the conclusion number one.
And Your Honor, the conclusion was based upon the report of harassment or assault, if I remember it correctly.
Right. But there's no talk about discussions with employees about that he seemed intoxicated and got behind the wheel or anything of that nature in the conclusion.
Not in the conclusion, but I would argue that report of harassment or assault, that report as a whole included everything that was said by those Casey's employees.
I know you would, but I'm focusing only on the conclusions for a minute. Sure. And then the expansion to stop is a different issue, that conclusion number two. Now, I want to go back to the findings because the court mentions in three different paragraphs that there were rude comments made. So that's the word that's used. and I've read this several times, and nowhere in the findings do I find the word threat used. The first use of threat was in the conclusion, but not in a finding. Did you notice that?
I did.
Okay. All right. And it seems to use harassing or threatening as interchangeable, but they're quite different. Would you agree?
I would agree.
Okay. Now, this defendant was not charged with any wrongdoing for what occurred at that store, was he?
He was not.
And what he did would not constitute criminal harassment, would it?
Your Honor, I guess I would disagree as to that. I believe that there was probable cause that had the state wished to proceed under a criminal harassment, they surely could have.
Okay, well, we can agree or disagree on that, but the disorderly conduct under SLJ is limited to fighting words, correct?
Yes.
Not rude words.
And I guess I would limit that to the content speech that are limited to fighting words. There's also conduct.
You made a distinction between content and conduct.
Yes.
And I'm not sure exactly. Do you get that from our court?
That is actually an order that was written by the Honorable Kevin Ross. That is In re the Welfare of TLS. That's 713 Northwest 2nd 877, where the court had determined that disorderly conduct is not limited to fighting words. It also includes offensive, obscene, abusive, boisterous, or noisy conduct. So in that specific case, there was a juvenile at a school that was shrieking profanities at an officer. The court had determined that these profanities at the officer, that is not fighting words, as they would not be expected to start an altercation, but that act of shrieking the profanities in this situation, that in and of itself was disorderly.
The volume, not the content of the speech. You're quoting from an opinion that was quoting the statute, correct?
Yes.
And the statute has been reinterpreted or limited by the Supreme Court's decisions, indicating that the statute has to be read in the when it comes to content, applying only to fighting words.
Yes, I agree.
Correct? And that case that you're referring to didn't regard disorderly conduct on the basis of fighting words, but on the basis of the volume.
Correct. As to the conduct, not the content of the speech.
Right. All right. I just wanted to clarify your answer. I think Judge Clary's question was dealing with content.
Yes.
It is dealing with content, but I'm going to go farther than that and suggest that the distinction made by Judge Ross, I don't believe has been made by Minnesota Supreme Court or ever by the United States Supreme Court, unless you're aware of the case.
Not that I had observed, Your Honor. No.
Okay. And in fact, in the almost 80 years since Chaplinsky versus New York, the fighting words case, there's never been a prosecution conviction upheld based on fighting words. Were you aware of that?
Your Honor, I guess looking at the cases that have been held in Minnesota, I think I would disagree that there's been plenty of cases that have been upheld for disorderly conduct.
I'm not talking about the state. I'm just saying whenever it's come back to the United States Supreme Court, they've never reiterated the holding in Chaplinsky in over 80 years. In other words, it's tenuous and questionable in terms of its free speech connotations. I think, frankly, the court's embarrassed about it and always been embarrassed about it. There is a free speech issue here, and when you make a content versus conduct distinction, you're just taking a back door to getting towards free speech. So I guess I politely and respectfully disagree with Judge Ross on this.
Your Honor, I guess I would disagree because looking at that statute, it is clearly broken up into two separate forms.
Perhaps, but a lot of free speech might be at a loud volume, and we can't very well say, well, we're going to charge you under because your volume is high. It's just a back door to getting that content, and it would never be upheld. We're getting kind of far afield from this case.
And I guess I would just, to piggyback on that. I understand that the court's concern, but I think it was a little more than just being loud. It's a kind of it's a totality of the circumstance sort of
analysis. This guy was being a jerk here. I mean, this was rude and disgusting behavior. He's being a jerk. But the issue becomes, was that all it was? In other words, we seem to be suggesting now in the conclusions that it's a threat. He didn't, I mean, I don't want to get into the details of what he said because it's so crude, but he didn't say, I'm going to do this. He said, I'd like to do this. Now, I think any distinction on threat would suggest that's not a threat. That's a rude behavior. Now the young woman might very well have taken it as behavior that concerned her, scared her even. But I guess I'm coming back to whether an officer can, based on these findings and conclusions, which are very thin, can follow someone out of and stop someone out of a 7-Eleven or whatever, based on rude behavior.
And, Your Honor, I think that just counsel's trying to look at this down, you know, a narrow tube here. He's not looking at the facts as a whole. Looking at this situation, Your Honor's correct, that ultimately the culmination of the events were these rude comments. We all know what they were.
Well, wait a minute. I have to clarify something because help me with the record. The rude comment, we're talking about bending over the clerk. I think that's what we're all talking about. I didn't think that was the comment that he made at the time. I thought that was the clerk saying, this has happened on other instances, and was using that as an example. Are you conceding that he actually said that at the time?
He said that at the time, that direct,
like past history, once he was in there. That's the way I read it in the proceedings.
The facts of the case were that Mr. Swanson had gone to that Casey's General Store twice on that evening. The first time he had been in there loud, boisterous, yelling at people, acting belligerent. And on that instance, he had called one of the clerks a bitch. From there, he was told to leave. He ended up coming back.
That's rude stuff. I mean, we aren't going to get anywhere there. But, quote, he came in here, he told a cashier, and she's referring to a prior incident.
The
bending over.
So I think what you're referring to is the... So the manager provided the statement, and the...
Well, it's very important, because if these are statements of what he's done before, you know, you're buttressing your entire stop on the officer's understanding that there was a valid threat that someone needed to be protected so that he could go and stop the vehicle. If this is complaints about other instances where he actually made such... for a woman, a threatening comment. I mean, the time and place is very important. Wouldn't you agree?
I agree. And
are you hanging your hat on solely the fact that he was belligerent and engaged in that behavior as a basis for the stop?
No. I agree 100% that there was harassment going on here, and the record would support
that. What I'm getting at is the police officer did not articulate that he had any reason to follow up on the claim the guy was drunk. Are you asserting that, or are you not?
That the claim that the defendant was not drunk was not a basis? I would argue against that.
But the officer didn't say that that was a reason he went. He said, according to the court's findings. I'm getting now what Mr. Donovan's getting at. He didn't say, well, I heard this person was drunk. All he said is there was harassment.
And, Your Honor, I believe that the court can look at the record as a whole here. The exhibits were introduced by stipulation by the parties. It was clearly included within those records and within that audio, what was heard, what was not heard. I don't think that's of a question. I would note that the district court did find these complaints to be credible. In the memorandum of law, the court had indicated that based on those complaints...
In the findings, Judge Cleary pulled it out. Belligerent, rude comments. That's how it's described all the way through. I mean, we don't make findings as a court. We have to accept what the district court did unless it's erroneous.
And I agree. And, Your Honor, at this point, I can provide a little clarification on... Because I know it's, you're probably all wondering, you know, why wasn't this, you know, the intoxication, why wasn't that addressed more in depth?
Seems easier.
I agree. But I would point to the defendant's memorandum that was provided. And that's what brings us to getting into this disorderly conduct and bypassing the intoxication. The defense memorandum states that the officer may have had suspicion of criminal activity for disorderly conduct at the Casey's. However, defendant was never charged with any of this offense related to his alleged conduct. For that reason, the seizure was not justified. The defense had argued not that there wasn't a reasonable articulable suspicion at the Casey's. Their argument was that because that was not charged, that did not form a basis for that seizure, which is very different. And now the appellant is trying to bring that in and wonders why wasn't that argued more in depth in the state's memorandum. Well, that's the reason. Because the defense had conceded to that point that there was reasonable articulable suspicion that happened at the Casey's. So at this point, I don't see how it is proper now to bring this appeal and argue that the state failed to assert that there was this reasonable suspicion of drunk driving when the defense had already conceded that there was reasonable suspicion for a criminal activity. And for that reason, that's why it was not expanded upon.
Just
right,
to be
wrong,
clear,
or
the criminal, excuse me, criminal activity meaning disorderly conduct?
Yes. Okay. So right, wrong, or somewhere in the middle, that's what gets us here today. That provides the context that I'm guessing you're all wondering, why wasn't that in there? So I'm requesting that the court upholds that decision, that there was a reasonable suspicion of criminal activity. Looking to the record as a whole, we are not just to look at this through the narrow window, what did that officer testify to? We can review all of the evidence that was provided to the judge, and that record is clear. Not only was there reasonable suspicion of drunk driving, there was reasonable suspicion of harassment, and there was reasonable suspicion of disorderly conduct, all of which were a basis to initiate that stop.
Just to be clear, you're asking us more or less to ignore the conclusions.
Your Honor, at this point, I believe that the conclusions are lacking. I do agree to a certain extent on that, but I think that the one to blame on that is the defense in their conceding of that reasonable suspicion.
Couldn't the court have concluded that as well?
I believe they certainly could have. And I see my time is up.
It appears there's no other questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just very briefly, Your Honors, I want to make 2 points. One is that Mr. Swanson never conceded that there was reasonable, articulable suspicion. He said that the officer may have had suspicion, and that's very different because reasonable is what matters. Reasonableness is the touchstone of the Fourth Amendment.
That's kind of parsing it pretty thin. So that's what you're saying, that was the argument? Yes, there was suspicion, but it wasn't reasonable? That was the argument in the district court?
Well, in his memo, where the state's saying he conceded.
Right, you're saying that's what was really the concession, and that he's really challenging the reasonableness of the suspicion.
I don't think you can say that he's conceding there's reasonable, articulable suspicion. He's just conceding that there's suspicion. He says there may have been suspicion, but reasonableness is that objective finding that we're saying you need to make.
But was there an argument that the suspicion wasn't reasonable? It sounds like you're parsing. You're asking us to draw an inference that seems inconsistent with the context.
I think I'm saying don't accept the state's claim that he conceded this.
Let's go back to our earlier discussion about whether the officer heard what was being said.
Mm-hmm.
So from the transcript of the exchange between the officer and the witnesses, officer regarding drunk driving, witness says, AM, and he's also, He is, not was, is also very much so intoxicated right now and driving. Officer, a couple of questions later, says, just want to kind of get the gist of what made you think he's intoxicated. And when I was coming up here, I think I heard you say he was slurring. Yep. And stumbling, the other witness says. And the officer says, stumbling and very loud. And the officer says, yeah. So going back to your concern that maybe the officer didn't hear it, or there was a reason to believe that the officer didn't hear what was being said about him driving drunk. Mm-hmm. I wanted to have you an opportunity to respond to this exchange in the record before the district court regarding the exchange.
I cannot contest that exchange happened, but.
Now, you were suggesting earlier that maybe the officer didn't hear it.
Well, why isn't he articulating it at the omnibus hearing? And why isn't the district court finding that fact? Even if he hears it, maybe he doesn't believe it. Maybe he thinks, I don't know, maybe sort of going to Judge Werke's point, they're saying a lot of stuff. When were these comments happening? Maybe the district court heard that and said, you know what, that's a mess, and I'm not going to sort it out, and no one has really argued this before me. But the officer needs to articulate. That's, again, from Didi, that's the language from the case. At the omnibus, he needs to be saying this. And I do want to talk about this omnibus hearing as well and what the state's sort of saying here on, we didn't raise it because Mr. Swanson didn't
argue. I wanted to get at one other thing. Judge Clary was suggesting that if there are words and content that may be protected by the First Amendment, that a disorderly conduct charge can't depend on the volume alone. Do you agree with that based upon the case law?
And I don't think.
Has the Supreme Court, our Supreme Court or the U.S. Supreme Court ever said so?
I do not know of a court that has said that or not said that. I do know that I have so many initials going through my head with somebody, the case, the TLS, but I think there was more there. There was shrieking, there was her refusing to leave, there was other behavior. And I think that that's the thing, maybe the distinction is that there's other behavior.
Counsel, I have to follow that up for a minute. Are you aware of any court making, other than our court, making that content, conduct distinction on fighting words? In other words, the volume? Do you have a Minnesota Supreme Court case, United States Supreme Court case, where they recognize that distinction?
I do not, Your Honor.
Okay.
And I know I have 1 minute left, but I do want to make a point about the state's argument about why this wasn't waived. The state has the burden. What the state is asking you to do here today is essentially to flip that burden. So suddenly Mr. Swanson had the obligation to show that there was not an exception to the warrant requirement, and the state only has to respond to that. Even if Mr. Swanson files his memorandum and says, no, there's nothing for disorderly conduct, the state is the party who should have elicited the testimony, raised that argument to the district court at the omnibus, and then in its writing say, also, this other ground, because they have the burden. And so it's not Mr. Swanson saying, gotcha, here at the Court of Appeals. It's the state saying, gotcha, we didn't do any of this below, and now we have an argument here for the first time.
As a matter of substance.
Sure.
If we were to disagree with you regarding what we review in our de novo review of evidence, facts, et cetera, do you dispute that the statements made to the officer would be grounds for reasonable suspicion to stop your client for drunk driving?
If the district court found that fact.
No, I mean, I understand that.
The district court, and I know I'm out of time.
Yeah.
May I respond?
Please.
If the district court had found this fact, and if everything else plays the same, and everyone makes the exact same arguments, but the district court has those findings, the clerk told Officer Volk that he was drunk. If we have a factual finding, I'm not making the same argument. Because you have that finding, and that's what's lacking here. Because that's the ground, sort of, and just that's Grunig, where you have a finding in the record that the state can hang its hat on. So, thank you very much.
Mr. Donovan, Mr. Johnson, thank you again. Oral argument